you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at www.tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call in and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Thank you for joining us again tonight. We've got some great guests lined up. We've got David Nance. He's a good friend and pretty much involved with everything conservative in Tennessee, at least this part of Tennessee. He's heavily involved with the Tea Party since they started. He is now very busy with the Constitution Party, and he is going around different places in the state, especially in West and Middle Tennessee, and helping set up Constitution parties. Dave, like many of us, is pretty much given up on the GOP. And another thing Dave's going to talk to us about tonight is the little DCs that are all through Tennessee. And these little DCs are our county governments. You don't have to go to DC to find people wasting money. You don't even have to go to Nashville to find people wasting money. There's not too many programs, grants, anything tied to money that our county governments won't jump on. And it's, you name a county government, odds are they are in debt. Odds are they have had to raise property taxes to attempt to cover their debt. Most of them, the biggest cost item on their sheet is the schools. But they spend and they spend and they spend. They do the tax and spend. They have it down to a science just like D.C. So he's going to talk to us about that. And we'll talk a little bit about maybe some of the things you could do. I'll talk to you about some of the experiences that we've had in the past that had we got involved a little sooner, we might have been able to stop some of the problems. And then a little later on, we're going to have Gary Lima. Now, Gary Lima is retired military, and he's a former member of TEMA in Tennessee, the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency. Anyway, that's essentially the state version of FEMA. And he was heavily involved with that and different planning, planned different portions of it. And he's going to talk to us about basic emergency prep. And we're not talking doomsday preppers here, although I'm sure he's qualified to go into that area. We're just talking about some basic emergency preparation that everybody needs to know about. You know, it was only a few years ago we had a huge ice storm that hit Tennessee and Kentucky, but it really hit Kentucky the worst. And we had people that were out of power for 2-3 weeks. Okay, so it is real. It's not just worst-case scenario. We're not talking zombie apocalypse type stuff. We're just talking about being prepared. Because if you're not prepared, that means you're relying on who? You're probably relying on the government. Or you're sponging off your neighbors who did prepare, one of the two. Either way, you don't want to do that. You want to be ready. You want to have what you need to have to get you through the initial stages anyway until things get up and running and things return to normal. So we'll talk to him about that a little bit later. But once again, I appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. We do have some good guests lined up tonight. And as usual, and I'll have to say this, I really want to thank the guests for coming on tonight. And I really appreciate the guests that have come on this show over the last 6 months or so. We've had some of the better conservative politicians come on here. We've had experts on everything from political Islam, which all of us in Tennessee know is a threat, to veterans concerned about veterans issues. Well, it looks like Dave has popped up in the queue here. Let's make sure we got good comms with him. Dave, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I appreciate you joining us tonight.
Thank you for the invitation.
How goes it with the Constitution Party? Give us a little update.
Well, we're growing. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we've got 14 counties organized now on the way to 95. We've got, let's see, I've got three counties in the 8th district, and I've got 10 to go. I've got 13 counties in the 8th district, so we're working at it, and it's still a long way to go. Even after we get a county organized, such as Gibson County or Madison County or Lauderdale County, the work begins, actually. You know, that's when we start having to, you know, get the party name out before the public and hopefully get them to the Internet, let them read the platform and get excited about it, I hope.
Well, I was too. What's the common thread? What is driving people to the Constitution Party? And I, of course, know the answer to this, but let's, for some of our listeners out there who might be diehard Republicans or those who, people who think, well, you know, a third party can't win and you're throwing away your vote and blah, 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 you've heard all the stories. What's the common thread that you hear out there about why people are interested in the Constitution Party?
Well, Davey, you finally, and I did myself, and I think this is common, I finally realize I can't keep voting for the people that are violating our Constitution. If we do, I mean, we're voting ourselves, but we're voting away our freedom. And that's the price we'll pay for continuing to reelect politicians who violate our Constitution. And that price is going to be our freedom. We've got to quit. We've got to break away. And, you know, the two parties, and both of them, their agenda is more power. And
yeah,
it's the same. And they can't get more power within the limits of the Constitution. And we all know that. They know that. And that's what more or less turns them into progressives. And the leadership, in my opinion, the leadership of both major parties are basically progressives. You know, probably a lot of listeners have heard what the, you know, that basically the Republican leadership has declared war on conservatives. Well, you know, conservatives is a broad term. Lamar Alexander considers himself a conservative. Of course, we don't. But I think the term constitutionalist is more accurate. It's more accurate to me. Where I'm concerned, but if you are a constitutionalist, there's no doubt you are a conservative. I mean, that's the Constitution itself is. I mean, you'd be considered an extremist just to support and defend the Constitution, which is what their oath of office calls for. Somebody like Ted Cruz actually seems to try to be doing, and.
Yeah, but he's one of the few. He's one of now. But now, in fairness, I read something recently that Mitch McConnell might actually be getting a spine. Now, he's not getting a spine for the right reason. And I know you read the article too. You want to maybe enlighten some of the listeners out there that haven't seen the article yet in reference to Mitch McConnell?
Well, basically, Mitch McConnell, just like the establishment Republicans, just declaring war on conservatives. Well, Dave, this is just amazing. Look, two out of three Americans consider themselves to be conservatives. Two out of three Americans. Now, neither major political party want to have anything to do with them. Now, the Republican Party declare war on two out of three Americans. You know, I've heard them call the party stupid. That's a gross understatement.
I'm with you. And you know, here's what's really funny, though. There are so many people, even after it's been made obvious by the leadership of the establishment, that they really don't want conservatives. They want your vote. They want your money. Other than that, they want you to shut up. But how many people will you hear say, your Constitution Party doesn't have a chance. You're throwing away your votes. You've got to stay with the GOP. That's the only way. I'm going to be honest with you. That really galls me. The thought that the only way to save our country is to remain in a party that has become almost as bad, at least recently, as destroying the Constitution as have the Democrats in a lot of ways. I mean, they haven't opposed it, near as strong as they could over the years.
You know, if you look at what the two parties are, let's say the Democrat Party, they want to do away with our, let's say, our Second Amendment, our, you know, Fifth Amendment, and our Tenth Amendment. Okay, Republican Party wants to do away with our First, our Fourth, and our Ninth. So you want to pick the one who's going to destroy your freedom the least? You know, good grief.
Well, even the things they supposedly fight for, they don't fight very well for.
No. They just, I mean, they're fighting for more power, and that's the bottom line. And, you know, myself, I decided that I'm wasting my vote if I don't vote my principles. And I talked to, you know, I think he's a real smart attorney here in Gibson County. It's a member of the Gibson County Patriots. And he said something that kind of struck home. And he said, look, vote your beliefs, vote your principles. Let God take care of the rest.
Yeah.
But Dave, if we voted against every politician who has voted against our Constitution in one election cycle, we would solve a huge part of America's problems.
Well, it would be a massive turnover.
Vote them out.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, the party leaderships of the two major parties, and I'd like to give you a couple examples, that the party leadership, their agenda is nowhere close to what the rank and file, and let's use the Republicans first, but the party's agenda is nowhere close to what the rank and file Republicans want it to be.
No, and the gap, I want to say something for just a minute. That there's a huge gap there, and the gap is growing. And speaking of growing, conservativenationmedia.com is growing. And we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design. Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are talking with David Nance, that's Nance, not Vance, about the Constitution Party in Tennessee. And back to you, Dave.
Yes. Well, what I was talking about is the disconnect between the rank and file of both parties and the party leadership of both parties. And maybe one of the best examples is in the Democrat Party. Back during the last Senate race with Senator Corker, there were Mark Clayton was the guy's name who won the Democrat nomination and won it very handily. There were seven people in that primary, in the Democrat primary. Mark Clayton won it hands down, and he was pro-life. He was for traditional biblical marriage. He wanted to do away with the TSA. His views were laid somewhere between conservative and libertarian. And like I say, the rank-and-file Democrats overwhelmingly elected him. The Democrat leadership wanted him kicked off the ticket. So
they went public with it. It was all in the papers.
Yeah, that shows what a disconnect there is. And then another example on the Republican side. Back in 2011, July the 15th, and Stephen Fincher hadn't been in office very long. And on July the 15th, he sent out an email to his base and said, go to my Facebook page and vote on whether you think the debt ceiling should be raised or not. This was a couple of weeks before the debt ceiling vote. And so I said, this is good. So I went to his Facebook page, and, of course, I voted no. And so I began to watch the vote. And 2 weeks later, on August the 1st, Stephen Fincher voted to raise the debt ceiling. 81% who responded said no.
Yeah.
So he did not represent his constituents. He represented John Boehner.
Yeah.
And that's clear. He represented the party agenda. So, you know, it's just getting so badly obvious, you know, that we're not represented. We do not have representative government anymore.
No, no. They don't care what we think.
No. Oh, yes. That's even obvious at the county level. We'll probably get into that here in a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Dave, we're going to have to take a real quick break. But don't go away. We'll be right back with Inside Tennessee right after this short break.
All right.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on ConservativeNationMedia.com. This is Dave Vance, your host for Inside Tennessee. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking with David Nance, and we are talking about the Constitution Party in Tennessee. And back to you, Dave. Let's take up where we left off before the break.
Yeah, the question, though, that we were dealing with was what's bringing people to the Constitution Party. And I think it's the once they read the platform, and they don't go there and read the platform unless they're already curious, already looking, and it's the fact that they realize they're not represented and that they're voting against themselves no matter which way they vote. So, no, you're not wasting your vote unless you vote against your own principles. Just, you know, if we all voted our principles, wouldn't we make a huge change?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, another thing that galls me about that is a party is essentially, okay, you do have a party structure, but a party is made up of people with common objectives, common views, common beliefs. It takes money. It takes effort on behalf of the membership, okay, to accomplish anything. Why is it that people who are in a GOP that have those beliefs and values, and we know that there's a lot of them who are still in the GOP that they disagree with this tactic of, you know, the Constitution Party. I got it. I understand that. But and so I'm not saying that they're not conservative. I'm not saying that they just haven't been convinced yet for whatever reason. But I don't understand why they would think that, hey, you know what? If all the people with principles left the party, joined another party, whether the Constitution Party or something completely different, I don't know why they believe that that could not work. And it really kind of galls me, though, that it does seem to be for a lot of them, they have too much loyalty to party versus loyalty to the principles. And I just, it really kind of galls me. And, you know, here's the deal. This kind of goes back to what your friend said about voting your principles. We may not be successful. Constitution Party may not be successful. But please give me some evidence that the GOP could be salvaged. I see none whatsoever.
The difference is a personal difference to me. If I support the Constitution Party, I can face myself in the mirror. that's the bottom line for me. I can work hard, and if it's a slow growth, and I know it's going to be a slow growth, but it can happen. And when people finally understand that both the leadership of both major political parties, the more power they grab, the more freedom we lose. And if we keep voting for them, we're voting away our freedom. We're literally voting away our freedom.
And now, Tennessee's a perfect example. I want to say something about Tennessee. Who can you be proud of in the GOP in Tennessee at the federal level? Certainly neither one of our senators, anybody, no conservative could claim to be proud of them or glad that they've supported them in any way, shape, or form. Of our 9 representatives, we really don't have any stellar representatives. Scott DeJarlais has probably come the closest to doing what he said he was going to do. And he's not my rep, okay? But he has probably come closer to it than most of the others.
I think actually John Duncan has the best score as far as the Heritage Foundation scorecard. I think he's the head of the pack right now, and he's nothing to get excited about.
Yeah. The ones we have in Tennessee, if you compare them to the legislators, for instance, in South Carolina, our guys are kind of like the bottom of the barrel for the average representative in South Carolina. At least they're conservative reps.
Yeah, I have compared them to South Carolina too, and the best we've got as far as our nine representatives would score the worst if they were in South Carolina.
But that does not mean that the people in South Carolina are more conservative. You're not going to find more conservative people than what you're going to find in Tennessee. But I think way too many of us, too many people for too long have bought into there's nothing you can do about it. And it's at the state level as well. We don't have a governor to be proud of, that's for sure. And he could very easily run as a Democrat. I mean, he votes like one. He acts like one.
Sure.
So it's pretty sad, and we know the handful in the House and the Senate at the state level that are true blue.
Yeah.
Not too many of them. We could probably sit here, and I doubt we'd need both hands to talk about it.
Seriously, you'd run. You'd. I don't think you could feel both hands now. it's sad. But the thing is, and it is a lot to do with Governor Haslam. If Governor Haslam was a Democrat, our state legislature would be in a lot better shape. They could fight a lot of the things that he's doing.
Yeah, they would fight.
Common Core is a fine example. Common Core in Tennessee, that's Bill Haslam's. His name is all over. It's his.
Yeah.
And, people are fighting that thing tooth and nail. And who brought it to us? The Republicans.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a never-ending battle, of course, as you know. But we got to. The only thing we can't do is quit, isn't it?
I'm with you. So, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. What is your idea of success for 14 for the Constitution Party at the state level? Because, just for the listeners out there, I happen to know, with the Constitution Party in Tennessee, even though it's part of a national party, we are focusing on Tennessee. They're not focusing on trying to take out Corker or Alexander. We don't have that much firepower yet, so we're talking state races initially, but what is your idea of success in 2014 for the Constitution Party?
If we got a state representative or a state senator elected, that would be success as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it would be a major step.
Yeah.
I think we're going to take county commission positions. I think we're going to take county mayor positions in some cases. I do know in Gibson County that there's about a 95% chance we're going to have a very good candidate running for county mayor, his Constitution Party. And we start there, and go up. It's not going to happen overnight. We know that.
Yeah.
But in we're going to do our best over the next 2 years to organize every county in Tennessee. Now, that sounds like a big eye in it, but we're going to work at it. And if we can get an organization in every county, we're going to be a serious problem for both parties.
Yeah.
There are Democrats that are joining the Constitution Party, not in huge numbers, but they're just as discouraged, disgusted with what their party leadership is doing as Republicans are. And they're good people. They just trust the Republicans less than they do the Democrats, and I can't blame them.
Well, you know, in truth, even though I think a lot of, at least in Tennessee, I think a lot of the people who voted Democrat for years and years are not aware of how far left the party was. Now, in 2012, with Clayton, that may have woke a lot of them up. When a guy who comes out, who is for traditional marriage, and he comes out, he's pro-life, and the party just disowns him. The leadership of the party disowns him and considered him extremist for those views. I think that probably woke up some of these Dems who had either been completely in the dark or who were lying to themselves about how far left their party had gone. And so now, in all honesty, I don't see how you could draw a lot of those people to the GOP, you know, with people like Haslam in charge and Alexander and Corker and whatnot. So I would think there would be a good number of Democrats eventually that would be interested in the Constitution Party versus going to – and right now, if you're in the GOP, how do you make an argument for the GOP? How do you make it? Because the GOP puts up a little bit of a fight on a few things, but eventually they cave on pretty much everything.
Well, I made a comment to one of our higher-level Republicans around here that, you know, he's basically arguing that we're going to split the vote, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I said, well, now, the Republican Party can stop this Constitution Party movement anytime he wants to. And he said, how's that? I said, start supporting and defending the Constitution like your oath of office calls for. Pretty simple.
What did he say? Anything?
He choked up. He doesn't have an answer.
In a lot of ways, the Tea Party movement came about because the GOP has not done what it said it was going to do. Okay, had the GOP been what it was supposed to be all these years, you'd have never had a Tea Party movement. Okay, now, in fairness, a lot of it had to do with when Obama got in, he went full tilt to the left, and that scared a lot of people, woke a lot of people up. But the GOP shares a lot of blame there. And every day that goes on, there's another reason, another example of why we shouldn't trust them, can't trust them. And so you're right. They have created it, and it will be their fault if the votes get split, and because people who vote for their principles leave the GOP. And if a Dem wins, it is the GOP's fault. It's not our fault. All they had to do, like you say, was live up to their oath.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I hope that there's more and more people that wake up to the fact that if we keep voting for the two major parties, we're going to lose our freedom, we've got left of it anyway, what hasn't been regulated away by some bureaucracy or another.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Now they've got. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And now they've got the EPA working on the ammunition issue. I don't know if you read that or not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm well aware of that. You know, they shut down the last lead smelter in Arkansas, the last one in the country. So I guess that means all of our lead will have to be imported.
Well, that's the goal, because if it's imported, then who gets to control it when it comes in? That'll be a federal hand controlling it as it comes in.
There you go.
So it's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
It is a nightmare. And speaking of nightmares, one of the worst nightmares that can fall on American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad that you did. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Don't go away. We'll be back right after this brief break.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? GoatsForTheOldGoat.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Henners, your host on Daily Roll Call on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Please join me each Friday as we talk about subjects like the Muslim Brotherhood, their goals, their agenda, and how it affects our schools, our law enforcement, and our communities. As a retired police officer, I'll give you an inside look into this issue and so much more. Don't miss it. Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we are speaking with David Nance about the Constitution Party in Tennessee. And Dave, back to the question of we asked what would success be in Tennessee for the Constitution Party in 2014, and you said getting a representative, state representative or state senator elected. Any ideas what part of the state that's more likely in, or what maybe even a district? Any thoughts on that?
I know a few, not really where the success might land, no, but I know a few that have intentions of running. I don't want to announce their candidacy for them. Okay, so
gotcha.
We'll just let it. I let it fall where it may, but we will have candidates running in the state representative races. And right now I don't know how many, and I'm not sure about the state Senate races, if we'll have any or not, because possibly at the other end of the state there might be, I'm not aware of. But I'm excited and hopeful that we will get a state representative elected. It'll make a difference. It'll open eyes. And the thing is, we can be confident in how he's going to vote.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, go ahead.
Well, I think you were probably getting ready to explain what I was going to ask in terms of the accountability that the Constitution Party has versus the GOP, how we keep the Constitution Party from becoming the GOP. There's some mechanisms built into it, if you could talk about that a little bit.
There is. In fact, the two major parties are both the same. There is no accountability other than the voter. And we know that the low-information voter outvotes the conservative voter because of name recognition or whatever. That, you know, it's a very hard thing to overcome. It doesn't matter how bad their voting record is. And it's like Lamar Alexander. It's horrible. But beating that name recognition, you're trying to beat the low information voter, and people vote by the impression that they have of a candidate,
right?
And they may have a good impression of Lamar Alexander, but it may be a false impression if they don't.
Yeah.
I think if a person doesn't know the voting record of the candidates, I think his civic duty would be stay home. But I've told some of the Beat Lamar campaign people, I said, look, I said, the way, you know, the only way to overcome this is people voting by their impression is you cannot change their impression. You can allow them to change it. Give them Lamar Alexander's voting record. Let them change their own impression. Because you can't go, that's just Lamar Alexander's a bad guy. That ain't going to get it, you know.
No. They remember him as a governor, and most people thought he was a good governor, so.
Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I don't think he was a very good governor. And I wasn't following politics at the time, but, you know, that's a lot of people's view, that he really wasn't a good governor. Like I say, personally, I don't know. But and I'm sure he changed when he got to Washington.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he got worse. I'm sure of that. Now, have you had any success setting up Constitution parties in the eastern part of the state, which is the Rhino stronghold?
No, we have. I mean, right now we have got four district directors. We've got the 7th, which is Jerry Pangle, myself in the 8th district, and then Joan Castle in the 9th district, and we've got another district. Scott was in the 5th district. And Scott's had some health issues, and so we're looking for another district director. And actually, we're looking for 5 district directors. So as we fill those district director positions in all 9 districts, then we can, you know, we can start moving better.
Yeah.
Jerry and I are having success in the 7th and 8th district in organizing counties.
Yeah. Well, 7th and 8th, you know, we both have been involved there, and you've got some hardcore conservatives in those districts. I'll just say that. Dave, I appreciate what you're doing on the Constitution Party, and I will definitely, when we have you back, that'll be another one of the topics. But I want to switch gears a little bit, and I don't know if you heard the opening of the show, but I refer to our county governments, not just your county government in Gibson, but the county government here in Stewart County, and my guess is it's at least probably 93 out of the 95 counties in Tennessee, if not all 95, they are essentially little DCs in terms of how they tax and spend. And I know you guys in Gibson County are pretty upset with what's going on there. So I'm going to turn it back to you, and you can kind of enlighten everybody on the level of taxing and spending going on in Gibson County, which I guarantee if they look at their own counties, they'll see the same thing.
They probably will, and you'll probably be surprised. I was. And I had been watching them to some degree, and I knew the budget, the 2012 budget, which is year ending 2012, actually June 30th, 2012 budget year end, was a horribly deficit budget. It was $1.7 million deficit budget. And but you know, I got busy with other things and wasn't watching it as close for the last 2 years. But we have racked up 3 years in a row of big deficit budgets. And actually, they borrowed $1.75 million to carry them through. And you might ask, carry them through to what? Till after the elections. So they can raise taxes. But for your listeners, there's some information here that would be interesting to everybody in the state, and particularly everybody in West Tennessee. If you go to the Gibson County Patriots website, which is www.gibsoncountypatriots.org, and click on county, all the information there, and there's one thing there that everybody would be particularly interested in, and what it is at the bottom of the page, correlation between high taxes and high unemployment. We have both. Now, if you click on that, what it will show you, and all of those menu items download a PDF for you, but what it shows you there is that it shows you every county in West Tennessee. Now, and it shows you their tax rates as far as the county tax added with the school tax. And we go from Shelby County at $4.06 down to Fayette County at $1.47. The next column over shows the unemployment rate. Now, just using as an example, the three bottom counties, lowest tax counties is Chester, Hardin, and Fayette. Their unemployment rate is all below 10%. Now, we'll go to the top of the chart. Let's go to close to the top. Here's Lauderdale, Carroll, and Gibson. All of their unemployment is above 12%. So there's a correlation between, you know, the taxes and the unemployment. The more they, you know, the higher the taxes, business are looking for a more friendly tax environment.
Yeah.
So business are going to go there, and they're going to employ people. Now, back about 2 years ago, the Gibson County mayor wanted a $12.50 wheel tax increase to give him a $500,000 fund to help attract business. Well, raising taxes to attract business is a losing proposition. It's self-defeating. And his idea was he, you know, try to out-bribe these other counties, you know, to get some industry in or whatever. You know, possibly not. But that's, you know, that's a gamble that you could lose. Anyway, that was voted down. There was only six commissioners that voted for that, voted to raise taxes to get more business. But if you go to that web page, it's the rundown, and one of the first things to download would be our budget graph. But it shows the last 3 years' deficit budgets. The 2012 budget was a $1.7 million deficit. The 2013 budget was $623,000 deficit budget. And the 2014 budget, which is the year we're in right now, was back up to $926,000. So, you know, we're over $3.2 million deficit budget over 3 years. And like I say, you know, they're borrowing the money. Well, you know, the interest is cheap. Good grief.
Now, that's the same thing I hear out of our county officials. The interest was just so low, we had to do it. Now, how many people do you have in Gibson County, out of curiosity? And then I've got to do a quick read.
Gibson County is 49,600 approximately.
Wow. Wow.
And our debt is somewhere around $21 million.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't sound like you have too many conservative-minded people on your county commission, and neither do we. But I'll tell you, there are some conservatives out there, and one of them is our friendly local pilot-in-command and GOP spokesman, Duke Brooks. He calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservative conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. So you're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are speaking with Dave Nance, not Vance, from Gibson County, and we're talking about county governments, our little D.C.s here in Tennessee. And, Dave, now, all these counties are audited yearly. And if I remember correctly, our county, Seward County, has basically failed the audit for the last 3 years that I know of. You know, they found something wrong the last 3 years. The state has. Now, nothing ever happens, but they find something wrong. Is it the same deal in Gibson County? Are they finding problems?
Yes, it is. We've been failing audits, too. And we didn't pass this one. It wasn't bad, though. There was a couple of deficiencies in a couple of departments. And, in fact, the mayor's office brought got their situation kind of in order. They had to put a purchase order system in place. And how they operated, the county itself, the county and the highway department together, the budget's around $20 million. And how they paid $20 million in bills and payroll, bills mainly, but how they did that without a purchase order system is amazing to me.
That as a former businessman, correct?
I was in business for 32 years. I cannot imagine not having a purchase order system.
You can't go out and raise bonds, though. You can't go out and raise a pass a wheel tax or raise a property tax. It was all coming out of your bottom line.
Yeah. Well, if they have a huge deficit budget, you know, they just open up the tax spigot. You know, I know some of these people in the county commissioners, not very many of them, but a few of them are business people. Well, and at least they run their household, and they know that you can't spend money you don't have. And, Dave, I think a lot of it comes from our federal government does this. It must be okay.
Yeah. Well, and they'll latch on to federal grants and state grants and any kind of money that's free or cheap, as they see it. Dave, we've got to take a real quick break, and when we do, we've got Kurt on the line, and I think he's got a little something he might want to throw in on this county budget situation. So, listeners, just stick with us. We'll be right back in just a minute after this short break.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
This is Reba McEntire for RAD. You know, I see a lot of funny things traveling all over this beautiful country of ours, but one thing that's not very funny is when someone gets in a car trying to drive when they're drunk. Take their keys away from them, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are talking with Dave Nance in reference to county government budgets or lack thereof. And we've got a caller on the line. This is Kurt. How are we doing tonight, Kurt?
Hey, good, Dave. Hey, this is way cool. I've got my favorite political vaudeville team, Nance and Vance, on the line here.
Hello, Kurt.
Hey, Dave, man, how are you tonight?
All right.
Of course, you know, you and I have talked, I guess, in the past pretty much about most of what you said here earlier on this thing with your particular county budget down there. And I know, you know, I know where you're coming from. One of the things we've got happening up here, and I've got to tip my hat to a young fellow that you both know, and that's Jeremy Schulz, who is now president of the Volunteers for Freedom since I got involved with the, and don't say it, David, since I got involved with the Henry County Republican Party.
the Henry County Gang of Progressives.
Whoa, hey, that's
you,
a,
you put now, that
now you know why, now you know why you're my favorite political Bobville team. But anyway, Jeremy has stepped forward and successfully, at least to this point in time, gone before the county commission repeatedly and put forth a resolution. He calls it the Resolution for Transparency in County Government. And I won't bore you with the details too much on it, but we had a first ever meeting last week with three representatives of myself, Jeremy, and another gentleman. met with the county mayor on the subject of this transparency. And, of course, the county mayor, he's trying to get us to soft-pedal the approach to the commissioners on there. He doesn't want to cause the commissioners to feel uncomfortable by talking about transparency. You know, he doesn't want a commissioner to be able to say, well, gosh, you know, you folks must not trust us. You know, well, if a commissioner has a problem with transparency, if he doesn't like the idea of being transparent, what is it? There's a problem somewhere. But anyway, I think this is going to move forward for us. We've got their attention. There's a lot of things happening that I really don't want to. I'm kind of like you were while we go about candidates, David. We don't want to jump the gun too quick on some things here. But, this transparency in county government, that's one of the most important things that can happen all the way across the state here. And if we get 95 counties in Tennessee working toward this goal of having a lot more say-so than we've had in the past in the operation of our county government, we can stop a lot of things that fall under the heading of Agenda 21, for instance. This thing of mitigation is rearing its ugly head again. This is an extremely important category that you're into there with. So, and I don't know if the timing is right on this or now or not. Did you get my email earlier about a speaker that I've got scheduled for over here in February?
I don't believe I had a chance to look at that one.
Well, it's no big secret. I'll just go ahead and tell you, David Fowler. I've been working on this for a while. David Fowler is going to be our speaker at our February meeting, and I want to turn this into an event as opposed to just a GOP meeting. Bring in all the right to life people, the anti-abortion activists, and this county and surrounding counties, as a matter of fact, in order to, in this part of the country, start a big push for Amendment Number 1. I think this is going to be one of the most, other than electing someone to an office, this is going to be one of the most important issues that we deal with in this coming election cycle is Amendment 1. So I've got that nailed down, which is a good thing.
Well, I will be there if at all possible.
Well, I kind of knew that. As I get a few more details worked out on it. Of course, this is a February event, so I'm not going to start banging the drum real hard and loud right now. Well, when do we get by Christmas and all that stuff? And then we'll go at it big. But just wanted you to know that.
Yeah.
But
keep
up the
Kurt,
good work. Dave,
I'm not sure
keep up the good work down there.
Kurt, you mentioned transparency, and that rung a bell here. I went over to the to the courthouse and met with the budget director, and she and I asked her for the last 5-year budgets, including the budget that we're in right now, and she gave them to me, and you know, no problem, and very prompt and very cordial, and I got home and I started crunching numbers. Well, the 2010 and the 2011 budgets had a total page. In 2012. 13 and 14, the totals page was gone. There wasn't one. So I took the budgets and went back over and met with her, and I said, how do I get the total expenditures, the total revenue? And this is, I'm just looking for the big picture. She says, well, you'll have to go to about 6 different pages in here and get them. And I was thinking to myself, and the county commissioners voted on this like this, and my guess is that a lot of those county commissioners don't realize that they voted for huge deficit budgets. I think there's a reason that totals page was taken off of the budget. But,
Dave, Kurt,
now you know why I'm laughing when you say yeah.
Guys, I hate to jump in here, but I've got we have our next guest on the line, but before I go, Dave, first, I appreciate you being with us. Kurt, I appreciate you calling in. But, Dave, before you go, you guys in Gibson County are not just sitting down and taking it. And so if you could real quick just kind of lay out what's going to be in your paper here in the next few months.
Unfortunately, we have four newspapers in Gibson County. So it gets expensive putting anything in the papers, but we're going to do it. We're putting a full page in all four Gibson County newspapers exposing a graph showing the budget deficits over the last 4 years, the county commissioners' voting records, the whole ball, everything you see on this webpage. And what the reason we're releasing it right now is to encourage people to run for county commission. We've got a line on there, why run for county commission, explain some of the things that they've been doing, when and how, it's just when to go pick up a petition, when you have to turn it in, how to find what district you're in. You can download a district map, download a list of the commissioners and what districts they serve. Then you can look at his voting record of your commissioner or commissioners and see if you want to run against them or, you know, talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, and see if you can find somebody to run. But that's the whole reason for releasing it, and I think we're going to release this on January the 7th, is to recruit people to run for county commission and get rid of some of these clowns.
That is an excellent idea. And it's similar to one that in our county we voted, our Tea Party voted a while back, that we were going to do a billboard in reference to some of our county commissioners. Now, we haven't done that yet, but I like your approach. Granted, we've only got one paper, a weekly paper, but I like that. You're doing it early enough to draw possible challengers out there. But that's an excellent idea. And, then, of course, in your case, it's a little more expensive since, you've got four newspapers.
See, we need to go out again in August just before the elections with the voting records again for our candidates' benefits, you know. So it's going to be a kind of a double hit financially. But, you know, I'm going out to the whole list of Gibson County Patriots and some business people, and, you know, we've got the money to do it now, but it's going to kind of drain us.
Yeah. Well, you know, the only way to get people to, step up is, number one, give them some indication that people are looking for a replacement for their current government, their current commissioners, as it might be. And, that's one way to do it. You put it in the papers. It's kind of hard to ignore.
Well, one thing that's going to help, too, Dave, is when they learn that their voting records are going to get blasted in the paper, it may even the ones that survive, it may change the way they vote.
Yeah. Well, I would think so. I would hope so.
So, I hope it's positive, and I hope we can roll quite a few of these commissioners. But our situation is we have a flaming liberal who is the budget chairman, chairman of the budget committee, and he's like the Pied Piper, and I guess you know that's what makes the rest of them. They just go along to get along.
Yeah. Well, until enough people challenge them and challenge them consistently, and I'm hoping that we have that some of our county commissioners are challenged this year. We've got a few people talking about it. I know there's some of them that really need to go. They've been here way too long, and, you know, their answer when it comes to money is always yes. Some of them might hem and haw a little bit when it's all said and done, though. Unfortunately, most of them vote, whether it's to raise property taxes, whether it's to pass a bond for a jail that we now find out $8.9 million or whatever, it's just not going to be enough. That's like I say, that's just like D.C. They're not any different. It's a smaller scale, but it's the same mentality. Dave, once again, I appreciate you being with us. I'll definitely have you back and keep up the good work, but we're going to have to take a break here. And, folks, don't go away. Right after the break, we're going to have Gary Lima with us, and we're going to be talking about emergency preparations. So, once again, Dave, thanks, and take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Dave. Good night.
Have a good night.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria.
Highlands Military is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Military offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, and thank you for your service.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. Cyber Monday was hot on healthcare.gov as more than 375,000 users visited the site before noon today. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney boasted about the numbers during his daily press briefing with reporters.
We believe that this website is and will function effectively for the vast majority of users. And each day, we will continue to take steps to make further improvements so that that experience is enhanced for users every day.
Users visiting the revamped site during busy times are now asked to provide their email addresses to be added to a queue to be invited back to go through the enrollment process at a later time. Asked whether the apparently successful relaunch of healthcare.gov was quote-unquote mission accomplished, Carney wouldn't bite.
We were able to make the necessary improvements to the website so that the vast majority of Americans who use the website have an experience in which the site functions effectively.
Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And our next guest is Gary Lima. He is a former employee of TEMA. How you doing tonight, Gary? Hello, Gary. Oh, looks like we've lost Gary. All right. Well, he should be back with us here in a minute. I'll go ahead and give you a little bit on his bio while we're waiting for him to pop back up. As an employee of TEMA, he worked for the Fixed Nuclear Facilities Program Manager. He was responsible for two local/state government off-site plans, annual training, and two biannual exercises for two 10-mile emergency planning zones. Worked in state emergency response activities, planning operations, human needs, shelter and disaster recovery, operations, and community relations, all as state coordinator and logistics as needed. If the state were to have a nuclear plant emergency, he was the TEMA FNF, the technical advisor to the direction and control officer. He had the role for day-to-day operations at TEMA to senior leadership and was liaison to TBA for 24/7 communications, including FEMA, NRC, and other organizations. And I'm going to have to ask him what some of those are, but he's also retired military. So he's a very busy man. Even in retirement, he still works for TEMA on a contract basis. So as soon as he pulls back up here with us, we'll talk to Gary. And until then, you'll have to listen to me do my best to fill in a little time here. We'll tell you this, though, just as a reminder of those of you who weren't here the first part of the show, you have to be ready. Floods, I mean, think about it. In 2010, what happened in Nashville? You know, you had a huge flood. Now, we fared a lot better than Katrina. I'm not saying that it was as bad here as it was in Katrina, but people helped each other. Plus, a lot of the people here in this part of the country tend to be more prepared. They tend to stock up a little more and to be more self-sufficient, or to attempt to be anyway. So that's something to keep in mind. You know, it's not, like I say, you're not going out on a limb. You're not crazy for being prepared. You should have, you know, 3 to 5 days stuff at a minimum. You might want to think about 10 days at a minimum. Another thing to keep in mind, most of your stores, your Walmarts, Sam's Clubs, Costco, any of those they don't keep the huge inventories they used to keep. They only keep about a three-day inventory because guess what? To keep that huge inventory, it costs them money. And so you're only going to have about a three-day supply anytime for these other stores. So once that three-day supply is out, and you can imagine when a disaster hits, you know what happens when around here when we hear snow's coming or a little bit of ice? Everybody and their brother goes out and buys milk, bread, and everything else. And the stores, the shelves will be bare in no time flat. Well, now, you think about it when there's a real emergency. What happens when there's a real emergency? So just need to keep those things in mind. You need to be prepared for anything that might come up. And we still don't have Gary. Hopefully he will be here with us in a minute. But we still got some callers on the line here. I'll go back to Kurt. Kurt, I'm sure you've had a few times in your life when you were either glad you had stocked up or wish you had stocked up.
Yeah, Dave. Yes to both of those. Definitely yes to both of those. It's ironic that a lot of people out there now are busy making noise. They call us, that call ourselves preppers, and that's a wide definition when you use that term, preppers. But I think the most common sense and most logical approach you can take to it is what you just said about that. How many days supply for us, you know, in the areas where we live, like Stewart and Henry County, you know, how much, when Walmart and Kroger and other places, how quick they're going to run out of business.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resources online. Oh, and when you do get Gary, just yell it, and I'll.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he just popped back up, so let me get him on there while he's with us. Thank you, Kurt.
Okay. Good deal. All right. I'll see you later.
All righty. Gary, you with us now?
Yes, I am. The signal got cut off, and I was just waiting. I thought y'all were going to call me back, so I got back on.
Okay. Well, I did go over your bio, and a couple things here I'll get you to clarify just a little bit. Okay, you're the TEMA FNF technical advisor. What is FNF?
Well, it's with Fixed Nuclear Facilities. I was the program manager for the state for the two nuclear power plants and responsible for a lot of the planning exercises and training.
Right. And what is NRC and NEI?
That is the National Radiological Commission there, Regulatory Commission, having to do with radiation in particular. In my field, it was nuclear power plants. And National Energy Institute is like an advisory council, and they kind of oversee the entire business of how the nuclear industry operates and in compliance with Nuclear Regulatory Commission requirements and federal code.
Okay. But now you were involved with emergency planning, not just for when things start glowing, but emergency prep all around. So I know you had a few things that you wanted to make sure some points you got across. So let's go ahead and turn it over to you. We got some time to lay out what some of the things that you feel are important, some of the basics that people need to know.
Well, okay. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. There is a book that was written by Dennis S. Maletti. It's called Disasters by Design, A Reassessment of Natural Hazards in the United States. It's a pretty good book. It can be found on the Internet just by a Google search. And basically it gives you an insight into what emergency preparedness planners are doing, what they're thinking about, demographics, everything when it comes to natural disasters. And also because we have so many more people in concentrated areas, you have a greater loss of property, life, that sort of thing. But what are the planning considerations are in that book? It's a good book. There's another book, it's called Emergency Management, Concepts and Strategies for Effective Programs, and that's written by Lucene G. Cantu. It's a Wiley publisher there. I might want to note that. And that's another good book. It's just something that gives an average reader an opportunity to look at what goes into planning for disasters, which is preparedness, training, and exercises. And, of course, there's a thing called mitigation. Then you can go online and just check other and be one of those people that looks at FEMA courses in emergency management. And you can get some basic knowledge at the 100, 200 level. Just look at what is actually involved and actually take a test and get a score. Now, the most important probably overall is locally is community emergency response training. That's CERT. They're done at firehouses and other locations. You just have to look it up for your area. Google search once again, CERT training, community emergency response team training. And what that does is all these three recommendations of something to do that empowers people to be a part of the response, understand the response by local and state government and federal government, but also makes you part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Right. Because you're going to be one of the two. You're either going to be part of the solution or part of the problem, whether you realize it or not.
And that's right. And I've got enough years in disaster experience, many, many real world, not counting exercises, natural hazard, man-made. And I can tell you on the natural hazard side of the house that, you know, basically the citizen that is most prepared is the one independent and not a drain on the system.
Well, and that's one of the things. I don't think anybody, you know, there's going to be people that are maybe old, disabled, or sick, and, you know, we're going to have to take care of them. But everybody else, you know, I really wouldn't want to be in a position where somebody had to rescue me, or I had to go and stand in a soup line somewhere for food because I, you know, hadn't prepared. Now, that's not to say that something couldn't happen. And, hey, you had everything ready. You thought you had it ready, and, wow, it was your house that got hit with the tornado, so now you're out of luck. I got it. Those kind of things happen. But if at all possible, I'd much rather be in a position to help people than to have other people have to help me or, worse yet, have to stand in a government line. And I think that's the way a lot of people in America feel. Speaking of America, America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are speaking with Gary Lima, a former TEMA advisor, among other things, who is an expert on emergency prep. And, Gary, back to you on some of the basic things that people can do to be prepared for emergencies.
Well, one thing to understand is that by the time, you know, in a major disaster, and understand this, if it happens to you, it's major. It could be a small area of land. It could be a large area of land. But if it happens to you, it's a disaster. If you're directly impacted, no matter how well you prepare, you could be out of all the resources you needed. Take, for example, the floods of 2010 or even 2011 floods and tornadoes. Significant counties, a number of counties were affected, and, you know, people in 2010 became islands because of the water around Nashville. Those that were prepared, in other words, they had 1 week or 2 weeks of things in the pantry, they became helpers. People that couldn't get to a store or a store ran out of supplies, there's about 3 days of goods on the shelf at any one time. When those run out, what do? Those people that are prepared for 96 hours to 2 weeks or even a month are the ones that become helpers. Those are the people that, you know, medicines included, they understand their situation and they know that something could happen. Those become helpers. Okay, they can be part of the response locally, and we saw that in 2010. If you count the volunteer help, not not including faith base, which was tremendous, but just people, individuals and blocks, people who became islands, but there might be four or five homes. They were able to help each other just because there were enough that were prepared, or they threw their own resources into the problem. Ideally, you know, people should have about a month's supply of food and water and medicines and whatever. I have a year. Our home, we have a year's supply. Just because, you know, how severe an emergency is depends on how well you can take care of yourself based on how well you've prepared for that. Now, I'm not saying
right.
a year, but that's what we do as a family. FEMA, you know, has even gone to, you know, like 96 hours. I can tell you right here now, in a disaster, with a natural hazard, I'm not even talking about a major catastrophic. I'm just talking about something that affects your life for a long period of time. It would be wise to have a month's supply of food and things of that nature in medicines and be a part of the solution, not part of the problem. The system is fantastic in this country. In fact, the state of Tennessee, in my opinion, I've been there long enough, and I'm not trying to propagandize, we've got the best in terms of emergency preparedness and response capability, just flat out. I've seen the FEMA footprint, when they finally come in after a number of days, depending on the disaster, how they marvel at the independence of Tennesseans and their preparedness attitude, or don't help me, use that resource or somebody else that needs it more than me. That's just that's the phenomenon in Tennessee. But as far as preparing and the local and state government, we've got a fantastic system. But even then, for the first 48 hours, it's hard to assess what's all happened out there from a long
right.
way away.
And a lot of places will be hard to get to as well, depending on the type of disaster, depending on how bad it is. You'll have places
absolutely.
That now you can't get to them, and they're going to, you know, maybe they had just a day's worth of stuff. Well, you know, now they're out of luck because it's going to take 3 days to get to them. Gary, we got to take a real quick break. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Inside Tennessee.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You've got to try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on conservativenationmedia.com.
Back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking with Gary Lima about emergency preparedness. Gary, before the break, you were talking about FEMA and the plans we have here in Tennessee that are the level of preparation and how smooth things go, generally speaking, in Tennessee when we have emergencies. Could you touch again on just your recommendations of minimum number of days of food and water and or other things that you think people should have?
My personal opinion, this is based on what I've observed over the years, is in 2010, the flood was one great example of what happens when you're cut off for long periods of time. Even though the response system is finally putting its footprint on people's lives in a significant way, I personally would say 2 weeks minimum. A month would be great. And that would be, canned goods, which you rotate, watered, with whether it's bottled water, you have a means, you have a well or something like that, but that you have water, and that's most important, water is, and it's uncontaminated, but that you have the ability to sustain your family. You can go on the Internet, and it's real easy to find out how much it takes to feed and keep a family well for a month, what your quantity should be. There are different organizations that will tell you that. Even the Mormons will tell you. They know, and that's real easy to obtain on the Internet. But I'd say about a month. I have preference for longer than that. You never know. I mean, you could have an earthquake. You don't know. Lines of communications could be broken up. But
now let's talk about earthquakes. I'm sorry, let's talk about earthquakes a minute, because we are close to the Madrid fault line. And we were talking the other day, and you said after a certain level, there's really not much that could be done. But before we get to the level of not much can be done, can you kind of lay out how things would work and what to expect, let's say, if we had a 7.1 or 6.5 on the Madrid line here in Tennessee? What would that look like? What would everybody be facing when that happened?
Well, I can tell you right now, 6.5 is a trigger for a total response. People don't have to wait for a phone call because phone lines might be down. The response would be tremendous. It would occur over days. It would take, a week to two. Just look at Katrina. There's a lot of layers that have to come in upon layers. It isn't instant. It's not microwave. And if you had, 7.1, 7.7, you're going to have issues closer to New Madrid that involve infrastructure damage, home damage, lines of communication. When I mean lines of communications, it's not just your telephone lines and your cell towers, but it's roads and bridges. Something that happened in 2010 is the amount of track that was wiped out with floodwaters going into Nashville. So, when lines of communications are disrupted, so is transport, commerce, goods and services. So, at that level, you're going to see a major national response. It's not... And there could be as many as seven states affected with New Madrid, but you're going to have a response from numerous states, all the states, and the federal government. There'll be a surge of support and resources coming towards the disaster area, the most affected population. That's how that works, the most affected population. And, communications will be getting reestablished and whatever, but it's going to take time. How much time? It's not speculative. They're estimates. There are different models. But, that's one that weeks to months of ability to take care of oneself as a family is important. But also watching for and trying to be ready for that response coming in. That's where I really am strong about the community emergency response team training. As many locals as are ready to understand how local government response and state response works, and what they can do makes the local community much stronger, even in the event of a major disaster.
Yeah. Now, so you guys, I think it wasn't too long ago, didn't they do some exercises based on the Madrid fault line, the New Madrid fault line? Weren't there some exercises in Tennessee?
A number of states do, and other states affected by fault lines do. And, the result is you're looking at some unknowns that become knowns in exercises, and then you start addressing those and planning to fix what can be done or to anticipate resource-wise. Issues like mitigation, what can you do to make infrastructure stronger, you know, the further west you go, and that sort of thing become issues, and over time it's all cost-benefit analysis. California's been going through that for many, many years, many years. Katrina kind of alerted us to, like, hey, you end up receiving the problems from another state, and you end up working, helping with their emergency, and then you begin to ask your own question, what's the closest threat to a Katrina for us? Well, obviously it's not a hurricane. I mean, a lot of flooding, right, but an earthquake. So there's a lot of preparedness planning that goes on in anticipating. But once it happens, there will be unknowns out there that occur, and the end result is how much are the people ready, and how much can you push forward? And even during an emergency, damage, loss of life and property.
Well, even assessing, I mean, I would imagine it's going to take you, like you said, a while just to do an assessment to figure out which area needs help the most and what kind of help they need. I mean, you're probably talking at least a few days for that.
In our state, that begins with local government, of course. You know, that's local government is the most important level to start with. Obviously, they're there where the crisis began. But there are drive-by windshield assessments that are made, and then there are ground assessments made where people actually start working the area and they start looking for the most impacted area. Then by the time the federal footprint comes in, which could be, you know, 5 days, 4 days, 3 days, and when I mean footprint, I mean people coming in, lots of people coming in, working through the regional operations centers, working down to the county level, linking them up with emergency management agency directors. And then you start doing the real heavy work as far as assessment, the real reality check. And their formulas where they decide something is 100% destroyed or a lot repairable or whatever. But that, you know, that takes 2, 3, 4, 5 days, depending on the scope, to make these assessments, and that's when the picture starts to become clear. First 48 hours, it's kind of hard on a large scale to get a real clear picture. And you got to understand too, the worse the disaster, the harder the communications, because communications has got to be replaced if it doesn't work. And there's local government dealing with the effect on them, their people, and then their ability to respond. And then everything after that is sustainment. How long can you sustain these operations? You know, a lot of resources start coming in. This is a wonderful country when it comes to even just people donating and whatever. And then eventually you get to the point where, you know, you've got too much of everything, and you're having to try to figure out how to resource that out and turn some back. We haven't had a New Madrid. We can only estimate and then plan accordingly. And I think this state's got a great catastrophic plan. I'm just proud of that. I think the people are the key to how well overall response goes, how well they're prepared. Everything has to do with cost-benefit analysis, even at family level. What's the likelihood of New Madrid? Shoot, 100 years, 200 years, who knows? What's the likelihood of tornadoes and floods?
Real good.
Real good.
Just a few years ago, we had that winter storm and hit Tennessee and Kentucky, and power was out for a couple weeks in Kentucky, in parts of Kentucky at least. And, you know, there was people from Tennessee who had to go help people over there. Matter of fact, here in where I live, in Stewart County, we had a tornado a couple years ago, and just a couple miles from here, and went through and caused a lot of damage. But, you know, definitely with you on the preparedness. When we come back here in a minute, I want to talk a little bit about the different layers. But let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Funny we should be talking about emergencies. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. Don't go away. We'll be right back after a short break.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase, Molon LeVay, which translated means, come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the worst injustice imaginable is the wrongful conviction of an innocent person. I'm Sam Thurman, host of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. We take a look at what happens when innocent people go to jail as a result of bad evidence, wrongful prosecution, and dishonest witnesses. We use real cases of actual Americans who've been wrongfully convicted. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 Eastern, 7 Central, conservativenationmedia.com.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. This is conservativenationmedia.com, and we're speaking to Gary Lima about emergency preparations. Hey, Gary, we have a question. Dave's got a question for you. Go ahead, Dave.
Gary, I had a question. Do you have any information or any kind of an outlook on what the situation might be in the event of a dollar collapse?
Well, a dollar collapse or implied economic collapse.
In some form. Now, if you're aware of the history of fiat currencies, and you're aware of what the Fed's doing today, at some point in probably the not too distant future, we're looking at a bad situation economically. Potentially, you know, the dollar in huge trouble. What could that entail?
Well, once you collapse the economy that way, and I was talking to a state senator a few weeks ago about this. I was asked about that. Once you collapse the mechanism by which goods and services can operate, even government services, we got a problem on our hands. And unfortunately, in this day and age, my dad remembers the Depression. And he's 85 years old, and I'll never forget some of the stories he used to say. I'm 60 years old, and it was tough. But that was not an economic collapse. That was a Depression. In economic collapse, you're cut off, and you're down to a system that is much more 1800s, early 1800s especially, where everything is local, and we would have to depend on ourselves locally. I mean, it would be something of a barter system. What's the currency worth? Well, it would be worth what people think it is, that sort of thing. As far as if you're implying, is it going to be a real hard time? Yeah, it's going to be a real hard time. It's going to be a very hard time, because when your currency doesn't matter anymore and there's no faith in it, Whitford Goods and Services.
Yes, exactly.
The barter system.
If there's no medium of exchange, we've got a huge, huge problem. And but it concerns me with what the Fed is doing today in creating massive amounts of money with the stroke of a computer. This is going to come back to haunt us, I'm sure.
Well, as a citizen, I'm talking about a citizen. I've got a political science undergraduate degree, and I've been around. I'm a person that loves to study history, and I like knowing what things are all about and how our system works and the world works. In common sense, you don't have to have an education past fifth, sixth grade using common sense. If the only way to survive is no longer on the farm, but if with a high population of people that we have today, dependent to a degree on government services and all that sort of thing, and to some people, I mean, their whole livelihood, they're dependent on government services. If that medium is gone, how fast can people go to a system, a barter system, or be independent? We used to be a very independent people, especially before the FDR administration. We were a very independent people. After that, we were still a fairly independent people, at least by character. But we're so integrated now electronically that, you know, if there'll be no faith and value in anything that we do except what we trust each other with. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And I can't tell you that the federal government is doing right or government's doing right by inflating and by fiating. That's crazy. The Weimar Republic went through that. And, you know, where people had to carry wheelbarrows with 1,000-something Deutschmarks to go get a loaf of bread. Brazil's been through that. You cannot inflate currency. Eventually it doesn't work anymore.
Oh, yeah. Apparently you and I both know the history of fiat currency and what, you know, and what the end it comes to. But, you know, just, you know, and I think you've answered my question. It's... there's not a good
matter
answer.
Of when.
Yeah,
it's a matter of when. It's not. You can't. What we're doing right now, I'm applying common sense. I mean, I had a year of economics in college after I got out of the Marines and went to college 4 years. But my economics professor would be dying. If he's still alive, he'd be dying if what he taught us, okay, was right, and now someone's calling it wrong today. Possible for you and I to have an economic relationship, and you finally realize that I'm an imposter. Would not our goods and services are coming to a halt, and you keep spending money on me, and I can't give you a return on that expense. You're going to quit the relationship,
yes.
And that's where we're fast going because. I mean, we're looking at the Chinese. We're borrowing from them. We're borrowing from here. I mean, borrowed dollars are just that. It'll eventually make you a slave.
There you go.
Yep.
You said you had a year's supply, and that's more than what's going to be needed for any kind of localized disaster.
Yeah. If you're talking natural hazards, that's true. I mean, that's more than enough. But I decided several years ago that, you know, let's work up to a year. I know that Mormons have been practicing this for a long time. But, you know, you can lose your job. And if you lose your job and you don't have to worry about the food where you can get by and make it for a year while you're looking for a job, there's a common sense approach there. Now, 50, 60-something years ago when a lot of people had farms and all, they didn't have to worry about eating. It's the people in the city that, and that's why the Depression was so hard on so many folks. They were city-bound, and they're in a soup kitchen. Farmers didn't worry about the food. So we have a modern way of compensating for that, mitigating the effects on us, buy 25-year shelf-life food, buy canned goods, rotating them. They're good from 3 to 5 years or more. And keeping up with that, and You know, if something worse came to worse, you don't have a job for a long period of time, there's your food. Now, I suspect this, at one point when it all collapses, it's just a matter of when, because you can only borrow so much before someone says, look, we're calling on the note. You might not have a job to pay for this, but then the federal government might not have the money to buy things to feed you. And I'm smart enough to know the federal government is only so powerful, and it cannot bring to bear a solution to the problem when you got over 100 million people or 200 million people that can't get food to the table.
But add to the factor that they are powerfully incompetent and powerfully corrupt. So you wouldn't want to rely on the federal government anyway.
No, I think we ought to adopt as Americans, and I'm a sincere believer in this, we ought to adopt as Americans the attitude of independence and doing what we can for ourselves, while many work to change the political landscape locally, grassroots, on up to state and federal level. And until that gets all cleaned up, people should be circumspect, be honest about whether they can sustain themselves for a long period of time. And while you can make hay while the sun shines, do what you can. We didn't have a one-year supply overnight. It took us a number of months, but we slowly and surely did this and that. And we're comfortable, so to the point that if I was gone and it was a disaster and I couldn't get home right away, I know my family's got food.
Yeah.
And that might be a one-month story for a family or a two-week story, but there's something comforting about that. That used to be the American way.
Yeah. Well, that was traditionally American. I mean, traditionally that's the way Americans done it. And while we're talking about traditional Americans, the leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness. But don't be fooled. Americans identify themselves as conservatives, outnumber liberals by 2-1, according to numerous polls, even by liberals. If you respect traditional American values, and that's what we've been talking about here today, there's a place for you to call home on the Internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, or TRADAM, as we call our home. TraditionalAmericanMovement.com is the place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be part of the conservative revolution, all on TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. That's TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. TRADAM is a liberal-free website that makes it a great website. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Gary Lima about emergency preparedness. We're going to see if Kurt's got a question for us here. He's been waiting on the line a few. Kurt, you want to jump in here a little bit?
Oh, well, what I started to say a moment ago there, before Gary came on, and by the way, hey, Gary, good to hear from you again.
Thank you.
Medication. I don't know how many people give serious consideration to that, but to have an extended supply of medication that's important to your very survival, really. I mean, there are certain meds that I take. You know, I'm no spring chicken, and I got to have certain things in order to keep the old body kind of halfway percolating and in balance and everything. If I have to go without it, I'm in trouble. So,
Kurt,
I have,
I'm sorry to interrupt here, Kurt, but I think the only thing you really need from what I've seen is coffee. I believe with coffee you could survive Hurricane Katrina.
You don't want to know how many cans of coffee and Gatorade I got, okay?
That's your supply.
But anyway,
that's your preparation there. Huh?
Yeah, that's part of it. But on a serious note, the medication is a very important part because, you know, Walmart's going to run out of pills probably just about as quickly as they run out of bread and milk. So I would say that everyone should make that one of their first priorities, to look at your medication needs. Don't go nuts on it because you may be taking something now that a year from now you don't need it anymore, but at least have enough to get you over the hump. whatever the most important medications of your life is, like blood pressure medicine, for instance. But anyway, yeah, that was my tidbit on that, Dave. Medication, your meds for to keep your body perking there. Don't run out.
And that's a good point. You know, I've wondered about that long term. If like what Dave's talking about happens, or let me rephrase, when what Dave's talking about happens, and I can't go to the pharmacy anymore and get, you know, I'm a few years behind you, but I still have some meds that I have to take. And, you know, I wonder, okay, hey, some of these would really affect my ability to take care of myself and my family. So I have to wonder, okay, is there an alternative? Is there something out there I could take naturally if I can't get any more of these?
Well, I can't answer that question for you. You'd have to get a hold of a good herbologist. I think that I said that right. I don't know. Someone into natural healing to answer that question for you. I just know in my case there are certain meds that I take that I have laid in a supply of them. Maybe not enough to last, you know, through the duration of whatever happens, but at least I know I'm not going to run out, you know, within a month or something.
Well, may I chime in on that one? I have a good relationship with my veterinarian, and believe me, I'm not practicing medicine here, okay? But, you know, we do have a right to take care of ourselves, and, you know, learning what you can about holistic medicines and herbs and all that sort of thing is very important, and there are medical benefits to that. Personally, I don't think pharmaceutical companies would cut population off if something went catastrophic economically. I mean, there's a lot of factors involved in how to get supply to people, but you know, even a relationship with a doctor where you say, I would like to have a certain amount on hand just in case for a month. Can you, you know, do a prescription? You know, the only difference between a lot of medicines that animals take and people take is dosage. What
wow.
people take is prescribed. What PetSmart lets you buy off the shelf for your pet isn't. You know, antibiotics included. You know, I have my veterinarian tell me that. You know, everything is common sense here. It's a good idea to do what you can to have, you know, enough on hand. And once again, I'm not prescribing anything. I'm just telling you that it's not a bleak end, but preparedness means what can you, what you just said, your caller just said. There it is.
Yeah.
What can you do to prepare on the med side? You know your situation and work with the doctor and say, you know, in case of an emergency and I can't get to you, you know, can I have X amount? And then there's pharmaceuticals you can buy online, but you got to have your doctor involved.
Yeah. Gary, I'm going to have to jump in real quick. I've got to take a break. Take a real short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Gary Thema about emergency preparation. Gary, I want to switch gears here just a little bit. I want to talk about something that's not necessarily emergency-related, but it is important to our country. Retired General Paul Valley recently put out a call to all veterans in reference to what's going on in the administration, what's going on in the military. And I think you're pretty well versed on that, so I'm going to let you talk about that a little bit because I think it's something our listeners need to hear.
Well, I got an email on that. General Valley is written an article and interviewed on it, and I saw it on WND, and I went ahead to authenticate all that and found out it was true. And basically what he's saying is, and a lot of us veterans feel strongly about this, is there's a Constitution, we were sworn to an oath to support and defend it. And Valley is saying it gets painful enough. The American people need to peaceably uprise. American people need to do something, the people. And that's the only way that local governments and state governments and federal governments are going to listen. People need to say enough's enough. Now, we're the only country on earth, and I'm talking now, not General Valley. We're the only country on earth, only one, where we, the people, are Caesar. We're the one. We made it clear through our founding fathers. Father started this, and we've contested this argument of the power of Washington, D.C., back in a real ugly war ourselves. But the point is we are the government, and we just elect people to represent our will. And the legitimacy of that will, okay, is our consent. And there's a lot that's been going on over a number of years, especially 5 years, where we do not consent. So Val Lee and a number of retired generals have been worried for some time, who obviously see, as some of us who are astute and been wanting to know what's going on with the country know, you got over 200 senior officers relieved now. You've got an incredible cherry-picking system that's weakening our military. Who's going to be in charge? You have a total disregard for the Constitution. In fact, I'll never forget Obama saying in 08 when some reporter followed him and he was walking along on a piece of asphalt, and I'll never forget him saying he had the problem he had with the Constitution is its constraints on government.
Yeah, yeah.
Wake up. And Valerie is saying, let's tell them no more.
And he's calling for this across the country, and
across
I'm just
country,
wondering
yes.
if there's anything lined up in Tennessee yet. I know we've talked about it some, and I know there's some other people that I'm sure are talking about it, but have we heard anything concrete yet about maybe some an event or some sort of showing or whatever?
We don't have anything concrete. We're trying to develop that. Maybe the middle of January, in that time frame, maybe Nashville could be the geopolitical center, the synergism. But to get our state leaders and local governments to understand that not only as veterans but civilians, the people, that
yeah.
we're going to be heard now and you're not taking us down in a road that means an unconstitutional form of government or a republic destroyed.
We need a real we the people moment. I've got Jerry on the line here. I'm sure he's got a good comment, maybe a question. Jerry, how you doing tonight?
Good, David. How are you? Gary? You,
all right.
Kurt? Yeah. The only thing I just wanted to bring out to add to everything that Gary's been saying is folks got to start getting up, talking to their neighbors, finding out who you can depend on, letting them know they can depend on you, because when it hits the fan, everybody's going to be running around like a chicken with their head cut off otherwise. Where do I go? Who do I turn to? What do I do? You know, folks, you know, and to all you folks out there that are doing stuff and getting together, get with your neighbors who don't know what's going on and let them know that they got a place to turn to. They got folks they can turn to, folks that are doing things that are in tune with what's going on and know what direction we got to go. And just, now's the time to start doing that, folks. You need to get out there and start talking to your neighbors. You know, we've gotten away from that with all this technology. I mean, any place you go, you see people on texting. I don't think people even talk to each other face-to-face half the time anymore. And we need to start doing that. You need to know who you can depend on, and they need to know who they can depend on. They need to know where they can turn. Most of us guys, like us and Gary and our guys, we know we got each other. We know where we can turn. There's folks out there, they ain't going to know where they can turn. They ain't going to know what the heck to do. And it's up to us, and it's part of our responsibility, being in the know, to make sure other folks get this information so they know when the need comes. And that's all I just want to add to what Gary said, and thanks for everything you've done, Gary. You've done a good job on letting folks know what they need to do. So I'll turn it back to you now, and have a good night, guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Yeah, he brings up a good point, and I'm guilty of this myself. The truth is I probably have better relationships with people that unfortunately are not close enough to help me in an emergency than what I do with a lot of my neighbors. I mean, not all my neighbors. I have at least one neighbor that I'm, you know, converse with on a regular basis. And I'm not on bad terms, but I'm not on the terms I should be on with my neighbors. And I think that's probably pretty common anymore. It's a lot more common than it used to be and a lot more common than it should be.
And the other thing, too, Dave, is we don't need to be people like Germany, which we indicted during Nuremberg, or Soviet Union, Russia, or even China, where you're afraid to talk to your neighbor. I get a little perturbed sometimes with the paranoia attitudes that people have. If you really get to know your neighbor, this is still a civil and good country. You might find out that they have the same worries you do, because that happens to me a number of times. And all of a sudden, in 2 minutes' time in a grocery store, you find out you're of like minds, everybody's worried. Well, if we're worried, what are you doing about it? Know who your neighbor is, and then invite them into the discussion. When the heat goes on and political leaders, I know of two political leaders in this state that have flat told me they know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, and there's a few more than that. I know there's some that are in the know. Obviously,
and
it's not something that you're going to hear about.
No, but why the discussion hasn't gone into the mainstream media, we already know, because they have got to suppress the idea that they literally backed the wrong horse, and they know what's coming, I don't know if it's safe face, I don't know what it is, but we can't count them as a friend. We can count our neighbor as a friend. We're Americans, and we're still better than anything that ever happened on this planet.
Well, amen to that.
And,
but guys, we've got about a minute left, so go ahead, Gary, any closing thoughts, and then Dave and Kurt, you chime in as well.
Here's my closing thought. You know, when 20% of the population are trying to rule us through the court system and through deceptive advertising and through a mass media that's no longer a free press but a propaganda arm and through corrupt politicians, 20% of the population is trying to rule the majority of us. That's got to come to an end. And it will come to an end when American people realize I am the government. My home is the first institution of government, and then it grows out from there, the castle doctrine. And nobody will dictate to me how I live. And we've already seen with Obamacare and a number of other things, Benghazi and you name it, the amount of corruption that comes in with the left. It's time to end their tour of duty and return our country to where the founders intended.
And with that, we're going to have to close. That's all the time we got. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Take care.